Report special produced by Mimi Rosenberg. Thanks to the Asian American Network Against Abuse of Human Rights and the Amnesty International USA New York City Women's Human Rights Action Team, the Asian Society, and Saki for South Asian Women. Special thanks for technical assistance to Ken Nash, co-producer and co-host of Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Mimi Rosenberg, WBAI in New York. See you next week on Sprouts. 3, 4.
On Free Radio at 101.1 FM. Yes, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides. A little late, but hey, it's worth the waiting for. Stay tuned.
Fashion downtown, plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capuleto that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks as the cat calls of the present are heard up and down Santa Clara Street, and beautiful Latinos strut by on Saints Deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean, because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown, and for no other reason, and you will find yourself at the corner of 27th and Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, but somewhere, someone's getting arrested for being brown.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It's the March 23rd edition. I'm your host, Robert Norse. And in case you decide you want to call into this show, either preemptively to stop the show now before it's too late, or just because you hear something that interests you, or perhaps something that really annoys you, please get your pencil out, get this number. Actually, it's not too hard to remember. It's 427-FRSC, and we are indeed Freak Radio Santa Cruz, or Free Radio Santa Cruz. Take your pick. It's again 427-3772, 427-FRSC, and you can reach me at the show, and you can talk to me, talk to the world, and talk to whoever's listening, that part of the world that, well, is particularly good and well-educated and tasteful and has the right idea. In other words, the folks that are listening to this show. Anyway, lots of stuff here that I'm trying to pull together. Perhaps a little chaotically, even as we speak. I'm also going to go online, so you can join me in the chat room, which is at Hotmail. Actually, no, it's not Hotmail. It's a hot chat room. Actually, it's usually a pretty cold chat room. That's why I'm counting on you to join me there, or hoping you might. The chat room is pagesincolor.com, pagesincolor.com, and that's the place to come in case you want to make some extended comments or see the inner workings of my show. My producer, the notorious Becky Johnson, will be there, or might be there. Sometimes she is and sometimes she isn't. And you can be there watching me exchange secret messages with the Zionist entity or whoever she happens to be at the moment. In any case, it's a place to come. It's pagesincolor.com. And you can also call in directly, as I said before, 427-3772. I'm hoping to get a call soon from Rico Thunder, also known as Wes, who has been doing some, he's gotten the ACLU to do some research into the police department's unusual infiltration and spying activities on around the New Year's Eve peaceful last night ceremony, the DIY do-it-yourself ceremony. There's been a little discussion about that in the papers because Robert Aronson, the police auditor's report, came out, came out the day before yesterday, and it was reported in the paper yesterday. And I actually got a copy of it and read through the whole thing. I will probably have some comments. I know that Wes probably does, and so that'll be worth having a look-see at. I'm also filled to the bursting point with lots of street interviews, and I'm going to be talking about those. And, of course, there was the infamous downtown commission meeting today. That's the advisory body to the city council that rubber stamps its latest merchant brainstorms. The latest one you may remember is the 10-minute trespass law, the law that would make it illegal for everybody in the world, and to say anybody in the world, except for a parking lot attendant, cleaners, or those with permits, would make it illegal to be in a parking lot or garage, and there are about 24 of them around the city. There are four garages and bunches of surface lots, making up to about, I've estimated alternately, from 6 to 8 or 9 square blocks. Big swath of territory, of space for the city attorney insists, only the purpose of parking vehicles and, in some cases, bicycles. I guess a bicycle is a vehicle. Cars, trucks, and bicycles. And anybody else is subject to arrest, infraction, or it, more important, because they haven't got the police to really police this, they want you to be scared and police yourselves, exclusion. They want you to exclude yourself from the parking lots unless you are accompanied by an adult car, vehicle, bicycle, or truck. In other words, some kind of a motor, an internal combustion, or electrical, I suppose, engine, or a hand-driven bicycle. I suppose tricycles might also qualify, though I'm not sure. I think it says bicycles or vehicles. I've got to look at the wording again. But the interesting thing about this ordinance is it doesn't just punish loiterers, poor people without vehicles, who might say want to cross the parking lot or maybe chat with a friend who has a vehicle. That's a no-no. Or maybe, maybe they want to stop and rest there for a moment. Maybe they're a passenger in a car and they want to sit there while somebody else is doing some business downtown. Get out of the car and try to find a public bench. That's going to be the answer. Possibly you can go spend your money on a cafe latte in one of the upscale cafes. In other words, it's going to be illegal if this law passes city council. And it, as I said, it just passed the downtown commission today. Maybe I haven't said that. I guess I wouldn't want to spoil the suspense, but unfortunately for me, the suspense was spoiled months ago when they first surfaced this. Can't find the right word to describe it. Grotesque aberration, typical handiwork of Barisone and Matt Farrell from the Public Works Department, stepchild of Sheila Coonerty, formerly chair of the Downtown Commission. Daughter of Neil Coonerty, the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz. I always thought Sheila was a sister, but she looks a little young, actually, to be Neil's sister. Sheila's also the co-chair of the American Civil Liberties Union. She's spending all her time trying to find a way to kind of work around the civil liberties questions, find some way of finessing them so that the pressing problem of violence against women and vulnerable people, which is one of the major pretexts being used to pass this law, although there's not much documentation of any unusual occurrence of violence in parking lots and garages against women or anybody else for that matter. I mean, there's a certain amount of crime and there's a certain number of calls for service. The documentation is to me it's rather unclear compared to the rest of the city whether parking lots and garages are particularly crime spots or violence spots. It certainly hasn't been documented in the media. We finally got some figures at today's downtown commission meeting, but they weren't clear because they didn't show us how things were in the rest of the downtown or in the rest of the city. We do know that of the 540, quote, calls for service that were in the four parking lot garages last year, that kind of compares with, what, 60, 70, 76,000 calls for service in the city. And that was poo-pooed by Deputy Chief Vogel, who said, hey, well, there's a lot more. If you look at the downtown area, you can get a much better idea. I mean, the city is such a broad idea. I mean, such a broad. The idea of looking at the city is inappropriate because the area is too broad. I mean, there aren't, for example, if you had 540 service calls at one residence, that would be a real problem. And here you have it at four parking garages. My goodness. Well, first of all, these aren't calls, criminal calls, calls about crimes. They're calls about a number of concerns, the most frequent one of which appears to be, yes, camping. You know, survival camping, you know, coming in out of the rain, putting in your sleeping bag, spending the night in a structure, preferably with a few people with you so you aren't going to get jumped by other people, which is a concern of homeless people. We've heard about that on the air before. So anyway, the major issue, even though Matt Farrell likes to deny it, it's the most frequent, quote, call for service, is camping. And the calls for service come from the parking lot attendants, though we don't know how many come from the parking lot attendants, because I don't think that figure was released. At least I didn't see it. And we also learned today that many of the calls for service aren't really calls for service at all. They are calls that the police department itself puts in if they go through the garages and say, we're going through the garage. And that becomes itself, because they are visiting the garage, a, quote, call for service, even though they weren't called. They're trying to perform a normal patrolling function, which is fine. You know, it's good the police keep an eye out here and there for car burglaries. I mean, that's appropriate, you know, for there's a lot of verbal concern from members on the commission and several merchants, though I haven't seen a documented indication from the community. Sheila Coonerty seemed to say that every woman she spoke to was apprehensive. Didn't ask whether every woman she spoke to wanted to have it set up so that it's illegal to enter a parking lot or garage without a car or bicycle, and that if you have a car or bicycle, you can only be there for 10 minutes or 15 minutes if Sheila Coonerty's new resolution is taken up by the city council in 2 weeks when it has its the next city council meeting after the one that's coming up this Tuesday. And I was told, by the way, this is, I guess, maybe a small consolation by Ryan Coonerty. That's the councilman who is Sheila's brother, I believe. He's also a Bookshop Santa Cruz progeny. He works there. He talked to me at some length on Tuesday at my request. I had some questions for him. Found out some interesting things. But he was nice enough to tell us, as some of us waited banned from the Downtown Association meeting, which is the merchants group that met after the Downtown Commission, which is the advisory so-called community body that is supposed to look over and represent the community and advise the council on the latest brainstorms of the city attorney, police department, and public works to cut back on public space for everybody, and particularly for poor people. The Downtown Association banned us from coming into their meeting. They, even though their earlier meeting on Tuesday had been open, this is the group of merchants that actually runs the downtown. They assess all the other merchants and then use the money for such fine projects as, I suppose, supporting the 10-minute rule, the 10-minute trespass law. I'm still calling it the 10-minute trespass law, though the Downtown Commission has recommended a 15-minute one because it's still, that's the form in which the city attorney presented it both to the city council and to the Downtown Commission. It actually went to city council in January, and there was a lot of hullabaloo from some of us saying, why the hell isn't this being sent to the Downtown Commission first? Though, frankly, we anticipated the Downtown Commission would do its usual buff and shine job and then pass it on, which it did. Anyway, this is going to be coming up not at the next council meeting, and it will be coming up in 2 weeks, I would assume in 2 weeks, maybe longer, probably in 2 weeks, unless we can find some way of really rousing public opinion against this at the next city council meeting, which will be the second Tuesday in April. So look for it then. However, coming up probably on the council agenda this Tuesday, though I have not gotten my copy of the agenda. I was running around in traffic, unfortunately, and didn't get there down to the... You have to get to the library between 5 and 5:30, at least I do, in order to see it. The agenda comes out on Thursday afternoon for the city council, the meeting coming up on Tuesday. There is a... I believe I was told there was going to be a no smoking in San Lorenzo and Grant Avenue parks ordinance or regulation going through the city council probably in the afternoon. And I'm going to check the city's website, but frankly, I don't think we're going to find anything posted this early. They usually don't post it until Friday, although you can get a hard copy, as I said before, of the city council's Tuesday agenda at the main public library, which is across from City Hall. Let's see what they have here. Santa Cruz City Council, Santa Cruz City website. I'm looking at it more closely here. Next meeting. And the next agenda they have is March 14th. And, of course, the agenda we're looking for is March 28th. So what I'm going to do, however, is based upon what I understand is happening. I think this was mentioned to me by Sherry Connable in an email. I could be wrong about that. I went to the Parks and Rec Commission department, actually. The commission met on March 1st, and they're sometimes hard to find their members. I know I tried to talk to Joe Ferrara of the Downtown Commission twice before this last meeting and wasn't able to do so. And I've got to tell you, I was really angry with Joe for his vote on this issue. Not because, as a merchant, it couldn't have been expected. It's quite understandable why Joe voted in favor of this. You know, the business is the bottom line. But he was making a lot of, I'm such a civil libertarian, or at least I'm so concerned about selective enforcement. He went to the Cinema 9 movie show and spoke at the pre-screening of V is for Vendetta, which is a story of a sort of a positive treatment of a terrorist. Interesting movie. Go check it out. I recommend it. And he was running through all this, frankly, bullshit that he was giving me, that he really wanted to make sure that this law would not be selectively enforced. And that was the main concern he had, when anybody in his right mind knows police are simply not going to cite people who are upper middle class, diapering their babies, having their children asleep in the car, whereas they are definitely going to drive away poor and homeless people who are committing no crime, simply being present in a parking lot, or even in a car in a parking lot, just because some bigot calls on them, you know, calls them on it. And they're also going to post signage encouraging us all to be snitches on each other on this issue, not to look out for each other and with respect to real crime and real violence, which I think is not snitching at all, but community responsibility. I mean, even as far as burglary into vehicles. I mean, I've got friends. I don't want their cars broken into. I don't think that's cool. But the idea that you're going to get people to inform on each other for homeless people seeking shelter, people crossing parking lots, people staying in their cars beyond 10 minutes or even beyond 15 minutes. Sheila Coonerty seemed to think that was a big deal, that she had extended the time limit, because she said she found that she spent 15 minutes listening to her radio and getting ready to go in and do her work in whatever she was doing. I'm not sure what kind of job she has downtown. So no one has asked the community whether they want to trade traditional Santa Cruz liberty, the right to pass through parking lots and parking garages any time of the day or night, provided you're not engaging in criminal behavior, make that completely illegal, make that act illegal, because of some, not just unclear, but highly unpersuasive stats about violence. It's not even about violence, but there's break-ins. There's the perception and apprehension of anxiety by some folks downtown who are shoppers and tourists, and by some women. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily... It's not an illegitimate concern, but is it a concern that these same women, and maybe others who don't share that concern, at least to the extent they do, would have for eliminating all right to be in any parking lot, any of the Santa Cruz parking garages, at any time of the day or night, unless you're parking a vehicle or going to the bathroom and returning? I think they're going to include that exception, which is not currently in the law. What do you think? 427-3772. Call in if you'd like. And also, again, I'm hoping for a call from Rico Thunder, our man about the, I don't want to say about the police department. The police department is more about him. One of the disorganizers of the last night DIY event that exposed, essentially, police surveillance of peaceful political groups and showed it's not just Bush, it's not just the Pentagon, it's not just the CIA. It's all those friends of Cynthia Matthews in the police department. It's Mayor Matthews' buddies, and it's Deputy Chief Vogel and Howard Scarry. And, gosh, all those people that were appointed and funded by City Manager for Life, Dick Wilson, they're the people who have set up a system of surveillance. Now, unfortunately, Bob Aronson, who's the police auditor who released this report 2 days ago, everyone was all happy that Bob said, hey, this. When there was a report by Deputy Chief Vogel who decided to investigate himself and declared that he was not guilty. And then Howard Scarry created some new, actually the first ever guidelines in Santa Cruz for when you can surveil political groups and when you can't. It's that were pretty loose guidelines that said there was any political illegal activity by being planned or involving any member of the group. You know, start looking for parking tickets, because that in essence is kind of the pretext being used by the police to surveil last night. They said last night did not have a permit. Well, groups planning parades, except for big ones, Cynthia Matthews, our mayor, talked about this issue in an interview I had with her. She said, hey, the gay and lesbian march gets a parade. You know, the merchants groups have parades with permits, but I would point out to her probably there are many other groups, including homeless civil rights groups, that do not have permits, don't intend to get permits, feel it's appropriate to make marches downtown without permits, and I think add to the community, don't detract from it by reminding us of our real responsibilities. They're not just shopping and sleeping. And, of course, if you're homeless, you can't sleep anyway, and it's. But I guess you can shop, so, I mean, we shouldn't be that unhappy. Anyway, I'm kind of hanging out, waiting for these calls. I've also invited Ann Simonton, who's a Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, to come on the air and talk with me about the issue. She and I have a difference of opinion on the question of whether this law, as proposed, or even perhaps as modified by Sheila Coonerty today, would increase the safety of vulnerable people, women particularly. That's the first question. And if it would, what's the trade-off? And that really has been my question and my anger at the Downtown Commission, the City Council, the Downtown Association, for not really putting the issue in clear terms. You are trading liberty for security. And while some people may believe that's necessary, and under some circumstances, when there are rioters in the streets and when there are, you know, when you're some kind of times of war and insurrection, depending, of course, on which side you're on, but still, there are times when martial law and curfews are appropriate. You know, if the gangs are shooting it out on Main Street all day long or, you know, with frequency, then you need to deal with it. I don't know if you need a curfew. I mean, you obviously need some kind of response. But the question here is there suddenly a crime wave in the parking garages and lots that I just somehow missed? Or the parking lot attendants just got cranky about what's going on with in terms of cleaning up because their time has been cut back. The amount of support they get has been cut back. And so they're, you know, and also because there's more pressure on homeless people, so they're getting into more conflicts with people in the parking lots. Ryan Coonerty sees guys assembling and disassembling bikes, and so he gets suspicious that there's theft going on there. And indeed, there may be. And I suggest to him, if you're concerned about that, how about a law that bans you from working on your bicycle or car in a parking garage or a parking lot, if that's it. But, you know, he said, well, then you have to go through a lot of the other things, like the other problems, like urination and defecation. I said, well, then how about a law that opens up 24-hour bathrooms? And, of course, there was no comment to that. Actually, we had a discussion where it became clear that Ryan was very committed to this law. Ryan Coonerty, of course, is a city council member. He will be backing this law. He and Cynthia Matthews seem to be big on it. They have positions on the secretive group called the Downtown Task Force, which members of the public are not allowed to attend. They meet every month. they're kind of with the staff heads, the conservative staff heads, members of the downtown commission. So ordinary people, members of the public, are not permitted to be a part of these closed-door meetings. I guess we wouldn't really necessarily call them secret because some you get reports out of them, people talk about them, but you can't go to them. So last Sunday, I do a Sunday show as well, as many of you know. The show is usually it starts at 9:30, goes to 1. I think next Sunday it's going to be another one of them long shows from 7:30 in the morning to 1 because Thomas Lovett is down in the Southland still, taking care of his mom, who was in a horrible fire accident down there. But I hear she's doing okay. That was what he said a couple days ago when I talked to him on the phone. So I'm going to be kind of, I've got a lot of time to fill, and I'm going to be filling it with, and I apologize in advance, but I think it's useful to have this documentation, the babblings of the Downtown Commission and the people who went to the Downtown Commission. I'm one of those who babbled there. So be prepared to hear a lot of that on Sunday, starting at 7:30 in the morning. And it's also archived. For those of you who don't know, and probably most of you do, but maybe some of you don't, Huff Santa Cruz, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz, www.huffsantacruz is the website that you can actually catch this show on. If you missed it, if you want to go back and listen to something again, there it is. And if you have any questions off air, by the way, I'll take the chance to tell you, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call if you want to get info on how to. Well, we're trying to organize against this 10-minute trespass law. It's just the latest in the death of a thousand cuts, is what it's just the latest in a series of abuses, you know, which are symbolized most vividly by the sleeping van in Santa Cruz. You know, we continue to hear from Matt Farrell of the Public Works that this is not intended to affect homeless people. Of course, they didn't at all consider how it would affect homeless people. There's not a word of testimony about that, except that Farrell did say, under our pressure, he had called the Homeless Service Center, and to their ever-loving, ever-loving isn't the word, well, to their damnation, they reported that as long as the law was fairly enforced, they didn't have any trouble with it. That was Farrell's report. Now, I'm, you know, for me to get angry at the Homeless Service Center, which I don't mind doing at different times, is perhaps a little premature, because I'm hoping we can actually get from the man who, does he have a BMW? I don't know. But he has a nice car and a nice house. He makes a nice salary. And he abandoned advocacy, civil rights advocacy for homeless people many years ago. That's Ken Cole. He once was the assistant. He was the co-chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force back in 1999. And he supported a number of good reforms, but you haven't heard. One hasn't heard a word from him since then, except at the annual Homeless Death Memorial, where he comes out of hibernation and makes a few comments. Pity. Anyway, I'm not sure if it was him or some staff members, but Matt Farrell told us today at the Downtown Commission meeting at 8:30 in the morning that the Homeless Service Center supports this law. He didn't explain where the new shelter would come to. Where would people go who are going to be driven out in the rain or discouraged from entering the parking structures? I mean, people do not want to run into hassles with the police, particularly people who may have warrants for not appearing in court on sleeping and camping tickets or other petty offenses that officers like CSO Pam Bechtel like to give out on downtown Pacific Avenue. So they don't want to risk themselves. So they may prefer to be more vulnerable, stay outside in the cold, risk, yes, rape or assault. I will say that, too, because that has happened. In fact, we have interviews with people in the last 3 days. A woman has been assaulted outside. But, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say, it's hard to say to blame, I don't know who to blame. I mean, I can obviously blame the people who assaulted her. But, I mean, I think it's extremely difficult for homeless people to sleep together. And by that I mean lodge together in safe groups, because they have to not only worry about each other, they have to worry about the police. They can't go in well-lighted areas. I've talked about this before. And in fact, it was the reason why the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women voted in 1998, I believe it was, to support ending the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance because they made it criminal for women to engage in survival camping. And they had to do it. There's no shelter in Santa Cruz for any more than 160 of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there. So it's pretty elementary. And, I mean, I think we need to fight this and the other downtown ordinances, as I've said for years. We need to fight the gentrification that's going on. We need to fight for the rights of minimum wage, at least, for people downtown, which is, I guess, Emily Riley, the Smiley Riley, as I called her, is a cut and run on this issue. I haven't seen the stats, so I've got to tell you I'm coming from a somewhat partisan and prejudiced position in the sense that I'm prejudging it. And I'd like to think, though, that if I get more information, I could change my mind on the minimum wage. A lot of these issues link together, and a lot of them, again, involve giving the police more and more power. And some people say, well, you know, police have a lot of power, but we're not really funding a lot of police positions because we are in a terrible budget crisis. But I learned today, and this was an interesting aspect of the testimony at the Downtown Commission, that there are plenty of police positions that are funded. 11 of them are funded and are not filled yet. They are just looking for, quote, qualified people. So the city hasn't cut back much on the police. I think they cut back 6 positions or something, but they've got 11 of them that are unfilled, and those are just waiting for the right person. If you want it, right person. So if you're interested in a nice job, you know, and which may involve a little tasering, you know, may involve a little wake-up calls, might involve kicking a homeless person awake at some point, as Lieutenant Clark used to be famous for doing in the 80s, but probably hasn't done much since, then there you go. Contact the Santa Cruz Police Department because they have openings, according to Deputy Chief Vogel. So all this was about Parks and Rec and about the fact that on the upcoming city council agenda on Tuesday, in 4 days or so, there's going to be an item that will ban smoking in San Lorenzo Park and Grant Street Park. And what do I think about this? I hate smoking. I have trouble passing anybody a cigarette or some matches. I really feel it is one of the most lethal drugs around. It probably isn't. There are probably other more lethal drugs in the environment that, you know, that we're breathing in every day. But I really am pissed at big time at tobacco manufacturers, then people who addict folks to this crap. On the other hand, I have some sympathy for people who feel, well, you know, I choose to do this. I'm going to do it. And my answer is, you know, you can do it. Just try not to do it around me unless I'm in a, you know, if I don't have a cold and I'm feeling in good health and I'm, you know, I like the smell of the tobacco, and which often isn't the case, okay. But I also recognize that homeless people, there's a high percentage of smokers among homeless people. And the proposal to ban smoking in San Lorenzo and Grant Avenue Parks, I am suspicious, has a motivation that is not simply the health of the community and the concern about the health of people smoking. You know, we're gonna take away your liberty from you for your own good, and we're also saving everybody else from secondhand smoke. Now, some will claim that secondhand smoke is not a problem. I'm not a part of that group, but I want you what I noticed, I went down to Parks and Rec, and they gave me, I was able to find out they had a March 1st hearing, and in that hearing they decided to forward to the city council support for this proposal to ban smoking in these two parks. Let's hear this, and you can judge for yourself what's going on.
We're about to lose Robert, who's our, we would not have a quorum, and I'd like to postpone this smoking in parks because, I mean, either we're going to lose him, so we can't deal with it.
And before you do that, can I make a motion?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to make a motion that we follow this, the record. Maybe you should have the parks.
Sorry about that, folks. Sorry for the dead air. The tape deck got hungry and decided to start eating my tape. So I'm going to shortly transfer my tape to another tape deck, and we will proceed to hear this discussion of smoking in the parks. I want to remind you again that you can join this exciting show by coming to 427, calling in at 427-3772, if you'd like. It's up to you. I frankly love it when I get calls because I get a little bored with myself. Actually, I don't really get bored with myself, but I think others probably do. And have mercy on the audience out there. Consider giving a call and saving us all from an endless monologue by me. Actually, you will get some other people that may be even more boring than I am or more difficult to believe. Let's see if we actually... I'm going to try another one of the machines. Maybe things will go better. Not going better yet. I'm continuing to have a few problems, so I'll have to turn to emergency measures here in the studio. Let's see here. Where are we at? I think I see what the problem is. We may be on the verge. Yeah, I think we are. I think we're good. Let's see if this is actually going to operate here, and we can proceed. Apologies for all these technical problems.
That we follow the recommendation of the Parks and Recreation Director in regards to number 4, smoking city parks. I think we could do it real quick is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think we just have to we have to follow the procedure.
Yeah.
Where staff...
I can stay 5 more minutes.
I can speak very quickly to this.
Because I have to then ask the public, and so we need to go through this so we're...
Okay, I think the staff report is self-explanatory. We're concerned about some of the public health issues in trying to respond to a speaker and neighbor from the Grant Park area several months ago requesting that we ban smoking in Grant Park. We've looked at all of our parks and feel that it makes sense to do a pilot program to see if we can manage no smoking. With our limited resources, the police department is behind us 100%. Dina from County Health is here. I believe she talked to us a couple years ago when we were talking about the no smoking in the playgrounds. But we've chose Grand Street Park and San Lorenzo Park because they have the most smokers. At San Lorenzo Park, it's so bad, we've looked at even expanding the children's playground. But that's going to cost us thousands and thousands of dollars to move that fence. The end result is that secondhand smoke is killing people. It's a nasty habit. It affects the environment. It affects the users of our park. And I'm hoping that you can support staff's recommendation for us to try it in these two parks. And then we can come back after 6 months or after summer with a report to you, and then you can determine if you want to go system-wide with the no smoking.
Okay. I have just a couple quick questions. Police enforcement, are they prepared to enforce this?
When they're at the parks, yes. They're not going to come to a park just because somebody's smoking.
Okay.
It's going to be complaint-driven, and if they have the resources, yes.
And San Lorenzo Valley Park, does that go all the way from, we call them benchlands?
The benchlands.
Is that ocean, the bridge?
Mm-hmm.
All the way to the end on over by Hindquarter. That whole property is...
Yes.
Okay.
The lower park and the upper park.
Okay.
We would post it.
Any other questions for staff?
No, I'll second the motion that Rudy made.
Well, do we have... Did you make it?
I thought you made a motion.
I'd like to make the motion that... Help me with the page.
I think we would need a motion. We would need a motion to designate, because this is just saying to discuss and advise staff of recommendations regarding the proposed designation. Are you wanting a motion from us that says...
It actually says that the commission recommend that city council adopt a resolution banning smoking in San Lorenzo Park and Grant Park.
What page do we have that on?
I'm just reading right from the agenda.
95.
We're on page 95.
Oh, the recommendation on the on page 95 is different.
The memo is different.
Okay, that's why. So you want to make the motion?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that the Parks and Rec Commission. Oh, wait a minute.
Let me just like to real quick for the record. Any public comment? See none.
I would like to recommend that the Parks and Rec Commission.
The recommendation is on the agenda.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm looking. It's recommended that the Parks and Rec Commission recommends the City Council adopt a resolution banning smoking in San Lorenzo and Grant Parks.
Okay.
Second?
Then I second that.
All right.
Any discussion?
He's really trying to leave.
Okay.
I had a question about this. I wanted to know, there's also a policy on the beach, and I just wanted to know if it's been effective, and if there have been people, I see people smoking on the beach all the time. It's one of those things that it's hard to ask a police officer who's in his car on Beach Street to jump out and run down to the water and jump on someone who's smoking. And so I was just curious if you had any report on that.
Well, the beach supervisor, John Alexio, feels that it has been successful. Does he have 100% compliance? No, as you know. Again, it's complaint-driven. When the rangers are there, they can enforce it. It gives us one more tool in our tool belt that if somebody is going against the posted regulation and there is a ranger or there is a city police officer there, they can go up and first of all ask the person not to, point to the sign that says there's an ordinance against it. We want compliance. Public relations is more important than the few dollars you're going to get from the ticket, and we feel that, you know, this is a start.
Yeah, my concern is
just have to stop here and interrupt this female voice saying we want compliance. This voice saying we want compliance, and that's why we don't really need to have police officers rushing down. We just want people to be afraid enough to not smoke, and to police themselves on this issue by making it illegal for them to do so. It's sort of like we're not going to have the police power to monitor the parking garages. We just want people to act like little policemen for themselves, exclude themselves from the public spaces for the convenience of the particular interest groups, or in order to support, frankly, the concerns of the parking lot attendants. In this case, down on the beaches. I'm hearkening back to the 10-minute parking lot trespass law, parking garage trespass law too. But this is a similar thing. The argument has been made somehow it's a kinder, gentler thing. We don't have to worry if we even have adequate police enforcement, because people are sufficiently afraid of even the prospect of a ticket that they will respond themselves to this, because they will see the sign posted, give all your money to the Iraqi war, and they will realize it's lawful, that's what they have to do, and they will follow orders. And obviously it's not give all your money to the Iraqi war, it's don't smoke or get out of the parking lot in 10 minutes. But the idea that whether this makes any real sense in terms, and whether people have been consulted on this issue who are affected by it, is not an issue. You can also see that this is not a concern, because they're considering this in a rush job deal at the Parks and Rec when they have 5 minutes to consider it. And probably when nobody in the city knows it's being considered, certainly no groups of people concerned with the rights of smokers, which I'm not a member, by the way, and probably would not be in support of. But the idea that again, they're going to trammel over this. It's a brainstorm of one of the agencies. They're just going to rush right forward with it. Now, maybe there was some article in the Sentinel that I missed. This was a March 1st Parks and Rec hearing on banning smoking. Maybe so. I don't know. Let's hear more.
There are a bunch of homeless people who hang out by the entrance to the wharf. I'm sure they have not escaped the notice of the staff. There have been social problems associated with this group of homeless people down on Beach Street. And they smoke. and they smoke on the beach, and they smoke under the wharf, and they smoke on Beach Street, on the benches, they smoke. And then you have your tourist weekends when there's thousands of people. My concern is this. The homeless people, I feel, are, I'm not going to say they're singled out for enforcement of the laws, but you could certainly draw that, if you could sense that, because I'm down there a lot, and on the weekends when all the tourists are there, the cops basically let the tourists do, you know, whatever they want. And I haven't seen the cops, you know, get the homeless people on smoking yet, but I am familiar with other stories of, you know, selective enforcement against homeless people. So I'm concerned. Now, I know Grant Street Park has a pretty good population of transients because they're near Emmeline Street. We all know San Lorenzo Park has a pretty good population of transient people because, yeah. So I'm just concerned that this not become a selective enforcement issue against certain populations.
So before you hear the answer, here again, the same pattern as we saw at the 10-minute trespass law hearing. They're concerned about selective enforcement. Indeed, that was the major concern of the downtown committee to examine problems that Emily Riley and Ed Porter convened in the summer of 2002 in order to deal with some crazy laws being proposed by the Jackson's shoe person, Candy Jackson, whose business left town and went bankrupt. She was proposing some very strict restrictions on assembly downtown. Instead, and what they found out, what the Riley Porter committee found out was, yeah, selective enforcement is a real problem downtown with the police. Did they set up a commission to deal with selective enforcement? Did they hire an ombudsperson? Did they look into a set of guidelines or investigate what folks in other cities had done? Did they investigate the police department on the issue? No. They instead gave the police more power. So what previously might have been illegal behavior by the police became legal behavior. And they, in essence, patted them on the back and said, go ahead, selectively enforce, as Mike Rotkin said. You can't catch every speeder. You know, you have to go after the ones you can find. In other words, for this city council, and for many throughout the country, selective enforcement is not a problem, provided they go after the undesirable people. And you see this kind of fleeting tribute to what might have been. It's like saying, oh, no, we don't want to selectively enforce, they're saying. Oh, you know, we're going to go to church on Sundays, but on Monday, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, we're going to kick the hell out of our neighbors, swindle them, mess with them, abuse them, and violate every other rule in the book. It's similar here. You have people who are, I don't know whether they're self-deluded or just... the word schizophrenic isn't right, the appropriate term. Maybe multiple personality. I don't know. They think they can engage in this what's called cognitive dissonance, where they can hold these two contradictory ideas in mind and profess them. They sound like bad politicians who say two different things on two different days and then sort of, you know, ignore the contradiction between the two things. If selective enforcement is a problem, and it is a problem, and this is something perhaps we can learn from, how can we deal with it? Since the city won't deal with it, the citizenry has to deal with it. And one of the ways I deal with it, of course, is by making a hullabaloo whenever the police begin to harass someone downtown for violating one of these ordinances. But some police officers kind of revel in this. People like CSO Pam Bechtel seems to regard it as a point of pride. You know, the more notches she can make in her ticket book, the happier she feels. And there are members in the community who support the police in this. I mean, different opinions, of course. I think it's unfortunate that people feel that way, and I think it has a lot to do with bigotry and a misguided identification with authority. But we have to find a way to deal with the issue of selective enforcement, we the community who is concerned about this, because it's obvious that the groups that are supposed to be dealing with it won't. In fact, they'll, as I said, they'll nod to the issue as it comes up, but then they will proceed to rubber stamp what's being put forward. So, continuing with this Parks and Rec hearing, this Parks and Rec Commission hearing, again, probably to almost empty chamber. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you. And this isn't a videotape, it's an audio tape. But it sounds like they're rushing this thing through, that one commission member has some doubts, saying, I'm concerned it's going to be selectively enforced. As, for example, Joe Ferrara said again with the 10-minute trespass law. But here's what happens next.
I hope not either. I think that the population that you're describing are very apparent in the two parks, and one of the reasons we chose those two parks because they have the most smokers, and yes, some of the folks there are the transient population. But this is not about getting them. This is about cleaning up our parks and making it a safer environment, and to me it's a stepping stone towards banning smoking in all of our city parks.
That you just made my argument for me. The fact that you chose these two parks out of all the parks to have this kind of a prohibition, it tells me something.
That's where we have the most smokers.
Yeah. Well, why is it okay for people to smoke in Frederick Street Park, but it's not okay for them to smoke in Grant Street Park?
Once again, the commission...
You of the transient people in Grant Street Park, they're saying we're being singled out.
Well, we could certainly...
Yeah, I know. I understand the...
Well, if you want to take it one step further and ban smoking in all city parks, I would be more than happy to take that to council.
Well, I would too. Then but this singling out a couple parks as being problems, you know what I'm saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's happening here is they're acknowledging they're going after these particular parks because there are vulnerable people without a voice who can be experimented on and see if they can be frightened away from these parks or frightened into behaviors that this commission wants them to engage in, which is not to smoke. You know, I think a lot of smokers I know are sensitive to other folks' concerns. And if you ask them, they will respond to you. But if you point to a sign that says, hey, there's a law here, you provoke a confrontation. And I think that in a way, it's a positive thing that people don't like being told that sort of social engineering bureaucrats can move around and engage in this kind of banning activity broadly, particularly when it's designed to go after an undesirable group that has nothing to do with the smokers. I mean, they aren't proposing going to the upper middle class parks first. They're going to go after the people in the poor neighborhoods. It's like you experiment on them first, and you also have an ulterior motive, which is to drive them away. Because one of the few pleasures homeless people have, those who are smokers, is to smoke. And it's not something I recommend, but it's probably healthier than shooting up or getting drunk. Not healthier than smoking marijuana, perhaps, but... Mayor Rotkin and Mayor Matthews are not allowing people, even who have medical marijuana cards, to smoke medical marijuana in places like Harvey West Park that are near the medical marijuana distributory. In fact, they said that if people do that, even if a homeless person does that, it was no other place to be to medicate, then that person will be banned from that club, the only club in town. I don't know if Lisa Molyneux is actually doing this, but this was the threat last summer. I should have asked her about that in a recent interview, and perhaps I will if I remember it. This is a pogrom against poor people. And it's amazing how many well-intentioned people who are amiable and pleasant and will agree with you on Iraq and health care and 100 other liberal issues just either don't see this or are completely indifferent to it. It's amazing to me. Obviously, this is social experimentation with the homeless. It's obviously directed at them. It's obviously abusive of them. And here's one member of the commission who sees it, but you'll see what happens to his perspective.
Go ahead, Rudy.
Been waiting. Yeah, having made the motion, I think it's good to run a pilot and take a look.
Unfortunately, I just had the tape has run out, and I'm going to have to find the next tape. While I'm doing that, a little musical interlude. Stay with me. Don't wander too far away.
Pueden faltar.
And that's Greedo Serpentino. Nice cut from their CD. It's a... It's track 8 on a 7-track CD. Very interesting. Not quite sure what that is. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. I'm your host, Robert Norse, with you for another hour or so. It looks like the callers I'd hoped to call in have not called. This gives you your big chance. If you want to call in, you can call. 427-3772 is the magic number, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And then we can all talk together. You can also go to the chat room at pagesincolor.com, or you can leave me a message off the air at 423-HUFF, that's it, 423-4833. HUFF is a homeless group that concerns itself still with civil rights. Actually, we're having a lot more meetings these days as more and more people get concerned, many of them homeless, some of them housed. Pretty good turnout at the demonstration today. I'm stalling, by the way, for time while this tape rewinds so I can actually continue that Park Commission discussion of the smoking item or the no smoking in Grant and San Lorenzo Parks. And it looks like I may have stalled long enough. I may be on top of it here. Let's see if we actually are in the right place. Strange thing, when I got these four, there are four tapes. They tried to charge me $20 for these tapes. It turned out they not only made the mistake of recording on only one side of each tape, but they recorded over one tape on top of itself. It's so I'm not quite sure how this is going to work out, but let's see what we can do. Here, I believe, is a continuation of the March 1st Parks and Recreation Commission hearing on the item on no smoking in the parks, in at least two of the parks, the homeless parks, of course.
That staff that's responsible for enforcing regulations be geared towards that. I think
it's the police.
No, it's the park ranger.
It's our ranger and then the police. But as we did on the beach, the first year, most of it was public relations. Are you aware that there's an ordinance? Do you see that no smoking sign? Please help us, put the cigarette out.
Yeah, I think as one of the people was speaking during the dog issue, I think it's much more prudent use of staff time to eliminate smoking, or look at the problems that smoking presents in a public park, as versus a dog running loose. And I would hope that would reflect the use of the ranger for doing those kinds of activities. So it's going to mean a change in the way our ranger now distributes his day. The next thing, as the motion states, it says, look, this is being done as a pilot to look at what it is. I think as we look at it more, and because of what you were just saying, Danette, as much as I really feel that the horrors of smoking on society, it exists, and I think when it comes back and we look at it again, I would really want to look at, is there a designated area that people that have this addiction to nicotine can hopefully gather and feed their addiction at the same time, perhaps get some alternatives to having that addiction. So I'm saying this because I'm not sure if I'm really sold on the idea of banning smoking entirely in all parks. But right now, that isn't what we're talking about. But I do want to say that, having made the motion.
Any other discussion on the motion?
I just want to clarify, I would vote in favor of a motion to ban smoking in all parks. But I'm not going to vote in favor of this.
Okay. All right. Any other comments, discussion? All right. All those in favor of the motion before us, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
All right. The ayes have it.
Thank you.
All right, then.
Now, unfortunately, I don't have a list of who was aye and who was nay. And perhaps I can find that out, or you can find that out, for those of you loyal listeners who actually want to look into this, by contacting Parks and Rec and Parks and Rec Department and talking to Parks and Rec. It sometimes takes a little tracking down to find out what's going down with Parks and Rec, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. The issue of public spaces with respect to parking lots and garages, with respect to smokers in the parks, with respect to shelter for the homeless, with respect to using parks at night for everybody, or the riverbanks at night, or being able to engage in innocent behavior on Pacific Avenue, has been an issue of mine for many years, because I see a gentrification process going on, and also a militarization process where police are expected to enforce laws that essentially criminalize innocent behavior. Not just behavior of homeless people, but everybody. We're all expected to be our own little cops on this stuff, even though the behavior is fine. You know, like hacky-sacking downtown. I actually saw people hacky-sacking again downtown, and police officers driving by very slowly, but at least have the good sense not to get out and ticket them for it or try to stop them. Perhaps it was because the Safesters, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, were playing up the way, and that there was and I was walking around with my tape recorder scowling and grumbling. Who knows? I mean, it's not clear what their motivation was. But there's a whole series of laws that don't make a lot of sense, but that actually represent somebody's idea of how the downtown should look without consulting the people who use the downtown. Only those elected by the special interest groups who had the money to get into city council offices, who had the political power to do it, who are catering, in most cases, to special interest groups like merchants and conservative residents, and who aren't really responding to the broader concerns of the community, I don't think. So, what I'm going to play now is a few street interviews, and then we'll come back to maybe a little bit more from the Downtown Commission, though the whole Downtown Commission punch-in-your-face hearings, which I think we're going to both finish the Downtown Commission hearing from March 17th and then play the one from March 23rd, which is today, on Sunday when the show comes back, or I should say when I do the next version of the show at 7:30. I'm actually going to, as I said, co-opt Thomas Levitt's show to do that, because I think Thomas is also concerned about these issues. We may even play a little music for those of you who would like a little musical interlude. So let's hear an interview or two from the streets so that we can hear what other folks think. It's about 2:20. We're in San Lorenzo Park on March 21st, Tuesday afternoon, and we're talking with, what would you like to be called?
Anonymous.
Okay, Anonymous. So what's cooking?
The shelter is selling food out their doors. Their showers are very unsanitary. You cannot take a shower that night unless you get stabbed, scabies, lice, and they're treating people very wrong.
Tell me more about how you were treated the last time you were there.
They're very rude and obnoxious to you, and they feed you slop.
So you were there within the last week?
This morning.
And was it a particular staff person, or was it generally more than one person?
They're all hateful.
Okay.
And but I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about the food that the public donates, the people that donate.
Tell me about that.
Do not get it. It goes out the door. They sell food out the door.
And did you actually see this happen today, or when did you see this happen?
Yesterday.
And what food was sold?
A big case of different stuff.
And any idea what was in the case?
Oh, there was tomatoes, there was Capri Sun drinks, there's a bunch of stuff, and I think that stuff is donated to the people that eat there, and we don't get it.
And about what time of day was this?
This was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Did you notice who was doing the selling?
No, not really.
Was it a man or a woman?
It was a man, and a woman bought the food.
And did you see how much money was exchanged?
$50.
And did anybody comment on this, either you or anybody else at the time that you heard?
No, but I just paid attention to it because it goes on all the time.
Because the previous time, right before that you saw this happen or heard of it happen, was when?
What, selling of the food?
Yeah.
Yesterday.
I heard that, but I mean before that.
Oh, before that, it's been about a week ago.
Okay. And was it the same people as far as you know, or different people?
Different people.
And what, you say that this affects the quality of the food, perhaps, that people are fed?
Oh, I know it is. When were you supposed to eat spaghetti and watch out for chicken bones?
So, do you still regularly eat there or not?
No, I do not. You will get sick, usually.
Last time you ate there was?
Yesterday, because I was hungry. I went 2 days without nothing to eat.
And how was that meal?
Awful.
Tell me about it.
It was just a bunch of slop added together, man. Slop. I fed hogs better stuff than that.
So what was in the slop? I mean, give me an example.
Oh, man, there's rice, noodles, just different stuff.
Any
you
meat?
Don't know what you're eating. You don't know. You don't have a clue.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only time they feed goods when they have, when they know they's got an inspector coming. That's the only time.
And how often does that happen?
Oh, I've seen it happen once, and I've been down here for 9 months.
Now, you're a single woman on your own out here, right?
Yes, I am.
And how is that going for you?
I'm okay.
Because I see you got kind of bruised up. I mean, how's
that? Oh, I got in a fight with a girl last night because she thought I stole her pocketbook, but I didn't. It was mine. It had my ID in it, you know.
But you got it. She assaulted you, or?
Yeah, she did. You can see that. That's obvious.
You got a scrape on your nose.
Yeah.
A lot of men and very few women out here, a lot of assaults, a lot of harassment, or how are you doing on that?
Oh, I've seen, I know this other guy got jacked, another homeless guy is stealing from the homeless, walking up, hitting them, knocking them out, and taking their stuff.
And you know this because it's happened to you, or someone you've seen, or someone you've heard
somebody
from?
Somebody I've seen, and I helped.
Uh-huh.
And the same guy hit me 3 times and ripped my shirt off.
When was this?
This has been about 2 months ago.
And the name of the man?
That done it. I ain't going to say his name.
Okay.
But, yeah, I know who he is.
What kind of defensive measures
the
would...
The cops won't do nothing about it because they don't care about the homeless.
Did you report it to the police?
Yes.
And which officer did you talk to?
I don't remember.
Okay. You know Officer Eric Seeley?
Yes.
What do you think of him?
I think he's an asshole.
Tell me more details.
No, he's two assholes in one.
He's very cruel and obnoxious. If a homeless person is sleeping under a bridge, trying to get out of the rain, we're not doing drugs, and we're not just trying to stay dry, and they run you out with nowhere to go, that's being cruel.
When was the last time this happened to you or someone you know?
About 2 days ago, right here, under the bridge. The cops run everybody off, said you got 30 minutes to leave or you're going to get arrested.
About what time of the day or night was it?
It was in the morning, early in the morning. It was their morning check, their morning sweep, as we call it. They're going to come through, they're going to run everybody out.
And about what time in the morning, 7, 8, 2, 3?
It's about 8 o'clock in the morning.
And how many people were affected by this?
Six that I know of.
And was this clear weather, rainy weather?
Rainy. It's rainy weather.
And... you've heard that have you heard the ordinance about the coming up about the 10-minute trespass law in parking lots and garages? I don't know if you've heard about that.
I don't go into parking lots or garages. I just sleep under nature or under a bridge. I don't go into nobody's parking lots. I don't trespass.
Right. I mean, actually, the city parking lots are public property.
Yeah.
But under this new law, what they're trying to do is make it illegal to be there for more than 10 minutes.
I just walk through the parking lots. I don't see
that. That, of course, would be illegal, too, under this new law.
Lot's going to come illegal.
So I'm wondering what you think of this law.
I think it's stupid.
Tell me more.
Redundant.
About what?
Stay where we're already safe.
Why don't you tell about that President Bush is stupid, too. He's an asshole. He's killing all the Americans off and helping them out over oil. No. We've been treated like dogs.
So what kind of changes would you like to see?
I'd like to see everybody get along.
And how would that best be done?
When God comes and takes us all home, probably.
Any changes that we can make here on Earth prior to that?
No, we're just killing each other out.
Love one another.
Very few people love one another.
Love one another.
Okay.
That's the story, man.
Anything else you'd like to report?
No, that's it.
And
guy named Jesus?
We've been talking to
Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous. And appreciate the update. And here's one who might not be so anonymous. Your name, sir?
I'm Bear.
What's up, Bear?
How you doing, Robert?
Good.
It's a beautiful day in the San Lorenzo Park. And as always, it's interesting, because I am homeless for 17 years, to talk to people that might have a little other perspective on what's really going on. And I'm not here to be loud about it, because those days are gone. But people, we got to love one another. We got to come together. We've got to find a way to come together. And we're doing it. And I'm seeing it on the streets. I've been homeless. My whole total income is from panhandling, Robert, as you know. And I do it every day on Ocean Ave. And
how much have you made today?
Enough to get a pouch of tobacco, a beer, and something to eat. About $10 maybe. And I don't stay there to get all I can get, because I could. I don't. No. I have a lot of respect for myself. And what I need, I need. What I don't need, somebody else's. But what I'm saying is, I am an advocate for the homeless here, because there are a fine community. There is, as we're surrounded by a fine community of homeless people here. Yes, we have our shit hit, or asshole, will bleep me or whatever. We have these dummies. But yes, we have a righteous community here. And I see those that have sharing daily with those that have not. And I'm one of the have-nots. And graciously they give. I mean, I'm not kidding you, brother. Graciously they give, share out of their kindness, their richness, whatever. Because, you know, we're doing the best we can. When you're just disabled and 54 years old and get real tired, it's kind of nice to see graciousness. And I've seen it fully in this community. You know that, Rich. You know that, Robert, don't you? Yes. You want to say something?
Yeah, I sound horrible.
All right.
Thank you, Bear.
Thank you, brother.
.415, we're at Taco Bell talking to an anonymous individual. Rabbit, go ahead, Rabbit.
Okay, so.
And before we hop along with Rabbit, a couple of other items. First of all, I want to commend somebody for jumping on the Pages in Color website, a rare occasion, and I want to not just salute this person, but also pass on her or his concerns. You know, Rubberneck is on the chat room. That's pagesincolor.com, in case you want to look at the ongoing discussion. He was asking me to talk to the culture of buy or die, the mentality of the business community, and he wonders if the city could require a wallet check or a credit check before entering the city and require one spend so much before you could leave. but no doubt this would only be selectively enforced against those who were not paying their fair share. You know, it's been said by some that what the merchants want you to do is walk in, empty your pockets, and leave, and that's how they regard the sidewalks as fundamentally conduits to the doors of their stores. You know, that's what they do. Not entirely true, of course, but I see sort of the spidery hand of John Lisher, who's an artisan's owner, whose, I guess, concerns about parking lots appeared in the paper in late December, early January, and then suddenly he's on the downtown association board, which met on Tuesday to discuss this issue and decide whether what they wanted to do. And some members of the downtown association just said, hold it, this is a rush job. You want to ban everybody from parking lots for, you know, completely, and then only allow people who are driving in bicycles 10 minutes to get out of their car and leave? I mean, let's think about this. And they said, well, look, you just come down to the Joe Ferraro was chairing this. He's also on the downtown commission. He's the owner of Atlantis Fantasy World. he said, well, you know, come on down to the downtown commission meeting, which is the meeting that a number of us went to protest this morning, and you'll see why this is all so important. It'll all be clear for you and so forth. And a number of the members of the board of directors did go down there. We spoke to the board of directors of this downtown association, the merchants group that, you know, is sort of the central cabal downtown of merchants that kind of runs things there, who has the leading voice, who were really the nasty hand behind the original downtown ordinances in 1994 when Neil Coonerty was pushing this stuff. He's the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz. The laws that make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, that make it illegal to peacefully spare change, that make it illegal to table, not entirely, not everywhere, but most places, and put police in a position where they could run people around, run people off, make things very uncomfortable for people, selectively enforce, which, of course, they did, and without any kind of discussion until this came up, as I mentioned before, in a public issue in 2002. I think it happened a year after a guy was beaten up by Sergeant Baker in an incident that began because a CSO, community service officer, wanted to ticket him at a Food Not Bombs meal for feeding the birds breadcrumbs. Wanted to ticket him for littering. This was in front of the sports shop across from the Cinema 9 Theater. And became a, he refused to accept the citation, walked away. He was, forcibly stopped by the police, got into a fight with them, and, got beaten up, got roughed up by them. Sergeant Baker, I believe, was the individual who did the hands-on therapy. But all this, of course, came from the police, the perception that the police have the power and the responsibility, and the merchants are giving it to them, to enforce this kind of crap, which, of course, will be extended under the 10-minute trespass law. Some of us met today after the Downtown Commission voted, I guess, 5-1 in favor of the 10-minute trespass law. They made a few changes. They made it a 15-minute trespass law. You can, their big concession was you can be in the parking lot for 15 minutes if you have a car or a bicycle, but not if you don't. You can't walk across one. You can't go around them. Sheila Coonerty expressed some reservations initially about extending this to parking lots, but they decided to forward the whole thing to City Council anyway. Heck, why not? Accepting the law that John Barisoni had put forward and Matt Farrell of the Public Works had put forward. They also included, as I said, a warning provision, so people would be warned before they would be cited. And then they also said that it should be reexamined after first it was 6 months, and I think they changed it to a year. This is Rotkin's, Councilmember Rotkin does this a lot. When he hears some civil liberties concerns, he says, oh, well, we'll look it over in a year. That's kind of what they said about the Patriot Act, you may remember. We're going to, but the Patriot Act actually had provisions that sunsetted. None of the things the city council does in terms of closing the parks at night, closing the riverbanks at night, curfews for the youth, making it illegal to sit on 95% of the sidewalks, making it illegal to have a political table anywhere in town except on Pacific Avenue, eliminating nighttime peaceful protests that involve any kind of structure on the sidewalk, making it illegal to sit down while panhandling. You didn't know that, did you? It's illegal to sit down while panhandling. Maybe those of you who listen to my show do. None of these laws, all these laws all got the kind of, they got the treatment from Rotkin. Well, you know, if these laws don't work, we'll just come back and fix them later. We'll have a look-see in 6 months or in a year and see how they go. We're not set in stone. We're reasonable. I'm on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union. Anyway, none of that ever really happened. And, of course, with the Patriot Act, there were some provisions, not the important ones, but some of the provisions were indeed due to sunset. But, of course, they were passed again with very minor changes, as those of you who follow the Patriot Act know, and our own city council, in spite of registering its objections to the Patriot Act, refused to pass a law like Arcata did, which said that if city employees cooperated with the Patriot Act, that would be a criminal act. Because city manager for life, Dick Wilson, just didn't like it. So afterwards, we talked a lot about this. I'm going to call it the 10-minute trespass law. It might be 15 minutes when it hits city council. what can we do about it? How can we fight it? And more important, do we want to waste energy fighting when there are broader battles to fight around questions like immigrants' rights, the Iraqi war, minimum wage, and some would say issues like violence against women locally, discrimination against people of color locally, wherever that happens, broader issues of police abuse and selective enforcement. All these are important things that we have to keep our eye on. Why bother to spend so much time on the 10-minute trespass law in the parking lots and garages? And that may be a valid concern, but I often see these issues as a way of mobilizing around other issues at the same time. And some people tell me, nah, that's not a good idea because, you know, they're going to have people who have one view on one issue, another view on another issue. They might support you on one or the other, but not on both. This is true, for example, with the Iraqi war. Perhaps some people are against the war, but they'd love to see the homeless run out of town, or they don't mind having these laws whose consequence is to criminalize or severely restrict homeless people and drive them out of shelter into the rain because they say the safety of women demands it, or the bottom line for the tourist dollar demands it, or the convenience or the safety or the right to have a tool, I like that phrase, the tool in the toolbox, another tool for the police to use, you see. The police need all these tools, just like Bush needs tools to deal, you know, he needs national security letters, he needs extreme rendition, he needs a flexible definition of torture, he needs $429 billion, or is it $439 billion for the military budget, which Sam Farr is passing right along to him, that's our representative. And we hear no objections from the city council on any of these issues, nor any investigations of where the money invested in investments for the city council goes in terms of military contractors or groups cooperating with this war effort, in spite of repeated pleas by some of us. Now, I run through these a lot of these issues broadly because, again, as I said, some of us have raised the flag on the issue, the flag of civil discontent. Civil rebellion even, certainly civil disobedience perhaps, around this parking lots and garages criminalization. Because it's really major stupid. It not only criminalizes homeless people, it criminalizes everybody. I mean, it is illegal to sit with your child in the car for more than 10 minutes or more than 15, depending on what they pass. It goes into a whole area of criminalization without looking at and weighing what is being lost. That is one thing that was not discussed at all in this downtown commission or that I heard in the downtown association. They were wondering, well, will it be effective in deterring crime? They didn't ask, are we going to lose a lot of Santa Cruz spirit, or lose a lot of liberty for local people doing completely innocent things and require them to kind of, you know, become little cops on themselves and rush around and not use these spaces in the way they've used them before and that are perfectly good uses for these spaces. Play music, talk to friends, hang out. That's now going to be illegal. I mean, isn't that a real drastic change? And I proposed that to Ryan Coonerty, the council member who's pushing this law, when we talked on Tuesday. He was gracious enough to meet with me. And he said, no, that's not a change. Santa Cruzans have never really used parking lots and garages in that way. We're just reasserting the proper use of parking lots and garages. I beg to differ. I don't have stats. I just have my own sort of sense of looking at people in parking lots and also noticing groups like Food Not Bombs using parking lots or Critical Mass or Art and Revolution. Not getting a permit, as will be required by this new law if you want to use a parking lot, but just using them. You know, respecting people who come in and need to park their cars and get in and out and so forth, but also recognizing that they're a public space in a town where public space is shrinking, in a town where, as I said, it's illegal to set up a political table on any sidewalk near a business anywhere in town except Pacific Avenue because sidewalks are less than 10 feet from buildings and it's illegal to have a display device, as they call it, which is a table, on a sidewalk. And you say, hey, I've seen voter registrars, and the answer is the police ignore this law when they choose to. And then when they don't, they'll surveil you and they'll ticket you. This is wrong, folks. This chills dissent. This is what Bob Aronson, the police auditor, was talking about in the newspaper headlines yesterday when he said that the actions of the Santa Cruz Police Department violated the civil rights of people planning that peaceful, successful parade downtown. Police actions that massively and regularly involve selective enforcement are wrong. And I'm not saying there aren't times when officers appropriately use discretion. I mean, that was the excuse that was given out at this downtown commission meeting today as to what's really going down and why we should support this law, because this gives officers discretion. Right now, if somebody sees someone lurking in the parking garage, they can call a police officer, but when the police officer gets there, he can't tell the person to leave because there's no law that says it's illegal for you to be in a parking lot. So let's make it illegal for everybody to be in a parking lot so the police can tell the bad guy to leave, is the argument. And, of course, the answer to that is a lot of good people are going to be denied a lot of access to these spaces because they're afraid of the police. And a lot of bad people engaging in what they call bad behavior will simply be more cautious about it. Maybe they'll drive in with their car and park their car and case out other cars when they have a car themselves or their bicycle. So it's not even going to affect the problem that Ryan Coonerty told me was one of his principal concerns, which is bike theft downtown where people use parking lot garages, he thinks, and perhaps so, to kind of retool bikes, put bike parts together, tear them down, and then go sell them as part of an illegal bike theft ring. That can still be done in parking lots and garages, just in the sense that you can take your bike through. You know, I mean, you can't spend long amounts of time there now. That's going to be the point. So that'll happen elsewhere. But the legal activities that would go on will not be able to happen. Tell me what you think about this. 427-3772. Or you can jump on the Pages in Color chat room, where we actually have a real chatter. I think Rubberneck has just left, but maybe you can take his place or her place. Check it out. And again, you can call in if you'd like at 427-3772. I guess what I should do is make a few comments on the auditor's report. Here's a story from the San Jose Mercury News. Probably some of you have seen the Santa Cruz Sentinel story. Here's the Mercury News story. Auditor criticizes Santa Cruz police for spying, by Ken McLaughlin. Santa Cruz police more than likely violated the civil rights of organizers of a zany New Year's Eve parade by using undercover officers to monitor their planning meetings, according to the city's police auditor. The auditor, Palo Alto attorney Robert Aronson, concludes in a 34-page report that police were too quick to send two undercover cops posing as surfer dudes to infiltrate the meetings. Less intrusive alternatives were available, but none were tried, Aronson wrote. One such option, previously suggested by Aronson, simply telephoning the parade organizers to see what they were up to. The controversy began after the city decided it could no longer afford to pay for First Night Santa Cruz, an alcohol-free New Year's Eve celebration that for years kept the downtown safe for families. Who could afford it? Let's add that, shall we? So a small group of artists vowed to stage a do-it-yourself parade instead, with no organizers and no parade permits. The group billed the event as a people's parade, Santa Cruz style. Police smelled anarchy. Police brass have called the dust-up a tempest in a teapot, arguing that police had every right to investigate the group, Last Night DIY, as they're called, to ensure that its permitless parade came off peacefully. But local activists with support from the American Civil Liberties Union have accused the department of needlessly spying on a community group. They've called it part of a chilling post-September 11th pattern. Police Chief Howard Scarry said today that he respected Aronson's role in the process. "The public's trust is very important to me," he said. "You have to respect individual rights. I'm not sure where we go from here, but it's important for people to know that a decision was made early on to make this process as open as possible." Scarry said he was happy that Aronson acknowledged that case law outlining when it's okay to infiltrate community groups was not completely clear. Wes Modes, also known as Rico Thunder, one of the parade organizers, said his group felt vindicated by Aronson's report. "It's just what we've been saying all along," said Modes, an artist and a carpenter from Felton. "He just shatters a lot of the arguments police have made." Of course, McLaughlin doesn't mention what those arguments are, but you can get a kind of a sense of what's going on by going to indybay.org, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, indybay.org, and then looking for the story on this, which contains a number of sub-stories. Independent investigation, SCPD violated the civil rights of organizers. And I'm kind of looking at some of this. There's some sort of pictures of the parade. There's the Sentinel article. I really had hoped that Rico would call in, and maybe I can get him to call on Sunday, because it would be helpful to discuss this in the context of a dialogue with him. I do have a copy of the report here. You can find it, I believe, in the library. It's also, I think he's posted it online. Let me double check here to see if it's actually online. Let's see. Independent investigation, and it's looks like there is a download that allows you to download the report, and so maybe it's I'm looking at it now, going into Adobe Reader, seeing if we actually have a downloaded report. I also give my commentary on this report, actually not on this report, upon the background of this case, and the report is online, so you can check it out yourself. Bob Aronson's report. Bob Aronson is a nice guy. Of course, so is Deputy Chief Vogel. You know, I mean, I've known Vogel for 17 years. He's one of the nicer cops, frankly. I mean, he's, you know, I haven't had a lot of complaints about Vogel's behavior in the past. I mean, he used to pal around with Pruger and harass the homeless in 88, but I think, you know, one got the feeling he was assigned to the job and he really didn't like to do it, and, you know, it was not his cup of tea. And I kind of felt good about him. I mean, he was the individual who actually blew the whistle on Mayor Keith Sugar. Keith Sugar, you may remember, was one of the three progressive council members elected back in 1998. And we hoped to actually get some real changes in town. We hoped, unfortunately, our hopes were not consummated or fulfilled. And Sugar, however, to his credit, did vote against the sleeping ban at one point. He tried to do that, but he also became very upset with activists. I think he felt we were, not following his agenda. We weren't, we were criticizing his allies, and he became repressive when he became mayor himself. And something I hope to document more carefully and more elaborately in the lawsuit that goes to trial in September in federal court. By the way, my trial, criminal trial locally, for those of you who want to mark your calendars, is April 17th. I go to court and face two misdemeanors, resisting arrest and disrupting a public meeting for standing at the microphone and wanting to speak for 2 minutes on an agenda item that everybody else got to talk for 2 minutes on. But I face jail time for that, so you might want to check that out or keep advised about it. Also, I believe Brandon the cello player is going to court. He is the man with the big cello downtown. You see him often in front of New Leaf Market playing those mellow cello tones. He has gotten two citations. He was taken away in handcuffs. He made the mistake of not disqualifying referee Basket. I think referee Basket, in spite of contradictory testimony, still needs to be disqualified. You need to go to higher courts in order to get the likelihood of a fair trial. Basket, I think, is a former county council, I believe. I'm not quite clear on actually what her position was with the county beforehand. She's in the basement. She's where the infraction tickets usually go. If you get an infraction ticket, like a sleeping ban or sitting on the sidewalk or bike the wrong way, your ticket goes to referee Kim Basket, or Basket Case, as some have unkindly called her. She doesn't inform you of some rights that you have, and she takes a very kind of supportive role. She presents herself in a supportive role, but I have because of the fact she doesn't really clearly tell you what your rights are, I think that it's a kind of a very paternalistic or perhaps maternalistic approach. I'm not sure if, you know, one would use a gender one way or the other with that. So anyway, Brandon's going to trial, or he's coming back, I believe, for arraignment. Either it's for arraignment or for trial. I hope it's not for trial, because I think if it's for trial, it's too late to disqualify the referee. I encourage people, if you get a ticket, go wait a couple weeks till it appears on the computer, then go down to the basement of the county building and cite section 170.6 CCP. 170.6 CCP. You have to mention that number and say, I wish to disqualify referee Basket because I believe she's prejudiced. Take the case to a court upstairs. You might not get any better treatment, but you've got more chance, has been my feeling. I, for instance, won in traffic court by taking my ticket upstairs. I mean, I got a visiting judge who thought I raised reasonable doubt about whether the police officer, who was, I believe, a highway patrol officer, stopped me when I believe, cautiously proceeded through an intersection after first stopping for the pedestrian, then stopping again after the pedestrian came back into the crosswalk or retreated back into the crosswalk, and I stopped again. He didn't like the speed at which I pulled away. Anyway, the point was that you can, get a better deal upstairs. Brandon, on April 4th at, I believe it's 10 a.m., will be appearing in the basement department. I believe it's Department 10, it's called, in the basement. It's right next to the law library, right around the corner from the American Cafe, the little cafeteria in the basement of the county building. Brandon Smith, that's his name on the court calendar, so check him out. He wants all the support he can get, people showing up in numbers. He will be facing two infraction charges, one, I believe, for having his cello case in the sidewalk, supposedly obstructing the sidewalk or perhaps insufficiently far away from a building, one of those horseshit laws that are abusive, are invitations to abuse, invitations to selective enforcement, invitations to harassment by the police force. But as far as the merchants, they're the opportunity to, you know, get rid of undesirables, run people around, reassure the trembling middle-class people that blanch at the sight of a poor person downtown, that it's okay to come back to the downtown because Carmel is just 2 days away. And 2 days into the future, we will have Carmel in Santa Cruz, right? April 4th, Brandon, 10 a.m. I believe it's April 4th. If somebody is listening who wants to call and correct me, do that, but I believe it's April 4th. So I was talking earlier about this report, which I'm going to be talking more about once I can actually corral Wes/Rico. Bob Aronson, I give a kind of my own analysis. I've given my own analysis of Bob Aronson before on this show, and I've also given it on Indie Bay. Bob is a nice guy who is too tightly tied in with the bureaucracy. He has been the excuse for the city council not to have real independent review. He has accepted, what is it, $20,000, $30,000 a year from them after the city council beheaded the police review board, which I had a lot of criticism of, but which actually had a African-American chair, Mark Half Moon, and they were beginning to nervously confront the police department. And I think about that time, the city council sent them packing. And Bob Aronson, who had been the counsel for them, stepped into the breach and took over their, quote, job. But, of course, he didn't hold any hearings on things. He didn't really have any meaningful office hours. He did for a while, but he came down like once a month or twice a month. People found him very hard to reach. I know that the V-Man tried to get a hold of him repeatedly and was not able to do so in the last couple weeks. He did return calls to me. I think he likes me. And he did consent to an interview, which you heard on the air, and it's archived. If you check on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, under Bathrop Spears Broadsides, that's the name of the show, you'll find early, I think it's in mid-January, I interviewed him, and you'll be able to go to that interview. But he did say, after hearing that Deputy Chief Vogel, after assigning, Lieutenant Escalante, Rudy Escalante, to spy on the last night people, or suggesting it was an option. Aronson said, well, hey, wait a minute. You can't investigate yourself. That sounds a little, would like to say okay, but you know, there's probably nothing wrong here. But you know, gosh, you know, you're investigating yourself, and you can't do that. So it's a flawed investigation. So this created a flurry and a concern, and immediately Rotkin, who's the head of the Police Public Safety Committee, closed down hearings that were scheduled to consider what guidelines could be to stop the spying on peaceful political groups. Said, oh, we have to wait. Now we'll let Bob look at this some more, and then we'll come back in a couple of months after all the fur has died down, of course, and we'll consider it again, you know, and we'll look at all and so forth. So at the last Public Safety Committee meeting, I believe, was on Monday, and I heard this from Rico, who told me that Grant Wilson of Art and Revolution tried to go to the 4 o'clock meeting. When he got to the 4 o'clock meeting, and again, this is all secondhand, and I'll be corrected perhaps by someone else, Rotkin moved the meeting to 7 o'clock. And, of course, then nobody came to the meeting but the... actually, I don't know who came to the meeting, but apparently Grant Wilson was not one of them, as far as I know. The business of Rotkin's slippery hands moving around meetings like this, canceling public comment, cutting it short. He cut it back to 2 minutes per person at the last Public Safety Committee meeting when a number of people showed up, seven or eight people showed up and wanted to speak. There was plenty of time for them to speak. And instead, and then Ed Porter made a pious statement that he would be happy to have people talk to him. People stood up and said they wanted to talk to him in the meeting. And he said, oh, we can't do it now, even though they had plenty of time to do it. It was just laughable. Just like the whole idea of Vogel's investigating himself was completely laughable. And so Bob Aronson could not. He said, well, you know, this is flawed, so I will look it over. What did his investigation consist of? Well, he interviewed Deputy Chief Vogel. He interviewed Rudy Escalante. And he did some research about the law and whether how appropriate it was to spy on peaceful political groups and what the legal precedents were. And his conclusion was, let's read his conclusion. I was surprised and disappointed in what I found, as I suspect you will be, that the relevant case law is not absolutely conclusive, but it appears more than likely that the Santa Cruz Police Department violated the civil rights of the parade organizers. Prior to conducting this research, I had gathered that, while perhaps not the best choice in hindsight, the department's operation had not violated any laws. So he kept, Aronson keeps insisting throughout this report that he's not concerned with punishing or holding accountable the officers involved. Heavens to Betsy, no way. But he's simply looking over the situation, a sort of, you know, for general commentary. And his final conclusion is he found three shortcomings in the report. One, that he was investigating himself, which somehow just is not as impartial as it might be. Because he conducted the investigation, he himself was not interviewed. So old Bob steps into the breach to interview Deputy Chief Vogel. So that little problem is put aside. And finally, that insufficient information was made regarding how and on what basis the decision was reached to place undercover operatives into the meetings. In other words, as not just what could they have maybe called up and said, are you planning to storm City Hall and, you know, so forth and that sort of thing? Are you, tell us more, reassure us. Actually, Aronson makes a reasonable suggestion and says that what the police department could have done or the city could have done is they could have sent a non-police person to go to the meeting, identify himself as to who he was, saying he was a city planner who just wanted to get some reassurance and offer some help. And then they might have let him into the meeting. They might not have let him in. He didn't have to be a uniformed police officer or an undercover police officer. It could have been some other department of the city. And it could have been done more openly and more explicitly. But what was completely missed by Aronson, one of the things that was completely missed in this report, was not just, it was the concern and the allegation made by Chief Howard Scarry that this was a unique incident, that it only happened once, that there is no regular spying on peaceful political groups, no regular use of undercover agents. And I have not researched this thoroughly, but I did note one woman went up to the city council on January 24th. Yeah, January 24th, and said, and plopped down what looked like a pretty thick packet of printings from the Indy indie media website, which is now Indie Bay, and said these are stories and photos of undercover operatives who have infiltrated parades in the last year or so from the Santa Cruz Police Department. And my response to that was then to go up at the next city council meeting, or even at that city council meeting, and say, Howard Scary then is a liar if this evidence is accurate. And nowhere in this report do we find him responding to that. Or even asking the question, did the police do any spying on any other peaceful events in the last year? And if so, what guidelines did they use? That question does not leave the lips of Bob Aronson. It's remarkable that it doesn't, particularly if he's concerned with general concerns about the police department around this and an investigation of this, because that really is the key issue. I mean, if this was an aberration, that's one thing. If it's a regular process that's going on, it is very significant. And I tend to suspect if the Indy Bay reporter who put the stuff forward is correct, and I've heard it from other sources too, it probably is not a unique occurrence. And it's significant if the police chief is not telling us the truth about this. What's even more significant, of course, is the casual way the city manager allowed Deputy Chief Vogel to investigate himself, and the casual way the city council and the mayor allowed this to happen. And now, of course, you know, this report is coming back. Everything is going to be rosy. Now, the problem with the report is Rico Thunder, it was able to acquire many, many pages of ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, not locally, but from San Francisco, got some discovery. That is to say, they went to the police department and made a Public Records Act request, and they got some information. That request is not mentioned at all in this report, and even more important, the follow-up, which was an attempt to answer, I think it was 13 questions that Rico Thunder had about the police department's operations, was completely ignored by the Santa Cruz Police Department. And in ignoring that whole issue, they really leave a lot of questions unanswered. So I'll be back on Sunday with hopefully some input from Rico and possibly some other folks around this issue. I'll be coming back with some lengthy, boring tapes, or actually not entirely boring. Some of them are interesting, of the Downtown Commission and their two latest hearings that will make our parking lots inaccessible to anyone except if you have a bicycle or a car, and then only for 10 minutes, you know, keep on the run. And we'll be talking about other stuff as well. If you want to catch me between now and then, give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, as I always tell you before I sign off. And, hey, until then, I appreciate you having listened to this. I hope somebody listened to this. And we have actually one listener here. I'm not sure for how long, but who knows? Maybe we had more than one. Hey. Anyway, thanks for being with me for this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Tune in again on Sunday morning at 7:30. And until then, keep your eyes out, watching out for each other, because there are other eyes watching you, and we need all the eyes we can. The eyes should have it, right? Thanks.
And markets. between the tags and broken seats. I didn't think I'd find much there. Just a bus ride, he never must. Cutting to the downtown in the city streets, counting santos to pass the time. San Salvador, San Carlos, San Fernando, Santa Clara. But like I said, not really paying attention, because I wasn't looking for anything. El calor took the empty seat beside me, wrapped his heavy brazos around the whole bus, so there wasn't a window big enough to cool anyone off. She fanned herself with a magazine, sending her olor drifting over the back of her seat and onto my lap. Slowly, slowly it came, like the way the cholos walk down Santa Clara Street on Sundays, making itself over my chest, washing itself over my face and settling into my nariz. And that was when I noticed her and took a deep, deep breath. Latina, sudadita, chulita. Ain't nothing like the smell of Aquanet and sweat. Brings back old memories of high school dances, quinceañeras, family barbecues with really, really fine second cousins who kind of wanted to get on, but you knew you couldn't. But that's another poem. You see, sometimes on a bus ride in the heart of Aslan, you find the strangest thing.
Something in the wind reminds you. place to be. So afraid to speak what was on my mind. But now I see that the truth can break the promise. To be honest, I just have to say I can't stay. Please don't try to show me how it used to be. I've seen those rainbows like dancers in your eyes. And though your heart may feel I've walked down a one-way street, oh,
and you come in when you like, all right?
Do 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 do.